A journalist boards a plane to Somalia, notebook in hand, chasing a story about modern-day pirates. He never imagines he'll become part of that story, chained, starving, watching the same desert horizon for nearly 3 years. Michael Scott Moore's journey into hell began with intellectual curiosity and ended with a profound understanding of human endurance, moral complexity, and the thin line between civilization and chaos. His captivity wasn't just a survival story. It became an unprecedented window into the psychology of hostages and captors alike, a meditation on faith and forgiveness, and a stark reminder that sometimes the most dangerous thing we can do is believe we understand a place we've only studied from afar. Moore had covered Somalia's piracy-ridden coast, but nothing prepared him for January 2012 when armed men shattered his car window in Galkayo, breaking his wrist as they dragged him into captivity. His local guides had betrayed him to pirate lord Mohamed Garfanji. Within hours, he was in the Somali desert, beginning a 977-day ordeal through filthy safe houses and eventually aboard the hijacked vessel Naham 3. Moore constructed an elaborate mental fortress to survive. Each dawn, he recited names of every crew member from his maritime journalism career and cataloged hundreds of fish species, techniques inspired by Indonesian novelist Pramudia Anantatur, who mentally composed 4 masterpieces during 14 years of imprisonment. Physical routines became sacred rituals, yoga and calisthenics at precise times, hand washing colorful shirts hung as aircraft signals. When denied these freedoms, he weaponized his body through hunger strikes, forcing captors worried about their investment to restore his privileges. Moore found salvation in ancient Stoicism, particularly Epictetus, a former slave turned philosopher who argued that victims suffer through their consent to suffering. When "why me" arose, Moore countered with "why not me," a perspective that dissolved neurosis. This wasn't resignation, but radical acceptance, what philosophers call amor fati, loving one's fate. The Stoics taught that we control only our responses, not external events. Chained in a Somali desert, this philosophy boiled away much neurosis, transforming captivity into spiritual practice. A gold-bound Bible from Tony, a Filipino cook, became his first reading after 3 months of intellectual starvation. Later, a shortwave radio connected him to the world through BBC broadcasts, Pope Benedict's resignation, Syria's civil war, the Boston Marathon bombing. These fragments proved life continued beyond his captivity, that he remained tethered to humanity. The question became whether he could prevent his circumstances from colonizing his inner life. Moore discovered captors of surprising moral complexity, men justifying kidnapping through economic grievance, nationalism, and religious interpretation. Many genuinely believed they defended Somali waters against foreign trawlers that had depleted fish stocks and dumped toxic waste since Somalia's 1991 collapse. This justified anger had metastasized into organized crime. The pirates observed daily prayers and Ramadan fasting while holding hostages. When Moore challenged his guard Bashko, "You are a Muslim, but you are also a thief," Bashko cited the Quran's permission for struggle against the infidel, making theft from non-Muslims acceptable. Their nationalism proved equally contradictory. Despite Somalia's collapsed state, Somaliness remained powerful. The flag's 5-pointed star represented dreams of greater Somalia uniting ethnic Somalis. Yet, clan divisions kept the nation fractured. Pirates operated like dysfunctional corporations, with investors, foot soldiers, and profit sharing that frequently erupted into violence. 2 days after Moore's release, 5 pirates died fighting over the ransom money, including 2 who had tormented him most. Violence escalated dramatically in year 2. Pirates hung Rolly upside down from a tree and beat him with bamboo canes, falsely claiming he was Israeli, while Moore watched helplessly. They threatened to sell him to Al-Shabaab, likely a bluff since the terrorist group publicly opposed piracy. After James Foley's ISIS beheading made headlines, Moore's guards grew uncomfortable, repeatedly assuring him such a fate wouldn't befall him. Moore's third escape attempt came when the Nahum 3's anchor chain snapped. He dove 20 feet into warm black water, swimming dolphin style, expecting bullets that never came. After 30 minutes, exhaustion forced an impossible choice: risk being crushed by the drifting hull or accept the life preserver his captors threw. He grabbed the rope. The brief taste of freedom cost him 3 weeks of solitary confinement, yet awakened something vital, a visceral reminder that freedom existed beyond his floating prison. He later reflected on captivity's fundamental paradox: I wanted to die, yet I didn't want to die. Moments of pure exhilaration intertwined with absolute horror, creating an almost transcendent state of being. In September 2014, Moore's mother secured his $1.6 million ransom through mortgaging her house, fundraisers, and donors. An earlier rescue attempt by former Navy SEAL Joe failed when pirates sensed desperation and raised demands. At the final exchange, Moore remained deeply suspicious. Conditioned by false promises, he believed he was simply being transferred to another gang. Only after phone calls with his mother and negotiator Bob did he accept his freedom was real. Derek, a weather-beaten pilot, arrived in a single-engine Cessna carrying fresh clothes and toiletries, Moore's first taste of normalcy in nearly 3 years. Despite a last-minute attempt by an armed guard to delay departure, Derek calmly taxied away and took off. 2 days later, five pirates died fighting over the ransom distribution, including Ali Dula and Abdi Yare, two who had tormented Moore most. The money meant to free him had triggered their destruction. Recovery proved agonizingly slow. Moore emerged with a quick temper, severe social anxiety, and hypervigilance that mapped escape routes and woke him nightly with racing heart and sweat-drenched sheets. Simple pleasures felt alien after years of deprivation. Intense physical exercise channeled his rage into something manageable. In 2015, Moore visited Rolly in the Seychelles, finding his former fellow captive remarkably recovered, surrounded by supportive family. When Rolly suggested fishing, he quickly added with dark humor, "Just around the harbor, not out toward Somalia." Moore later attended the Nahum 3 crew's release ceremony in Nairobi, immediately recognizing the trauma markers: haunted silences, gaunt faces, frozen anger beneath careful smiles. Despite language barriers, they connected through shared survival, celebrating with karaoke and church services that pointed toward what Moore called a durability of the soul. His worldview transformed fundamentally. The journalist's detachment gave way to understanding that living in civilization keeps us civilized. Moral behavior depends greatly on social context. His individualism was tempered by oceans of gratitude for those who helped. Most profoundly, Moore realized bitterness was an act of will he could choose to release. Hearing Pope Francis compare sin to stars that vanish when the sun rises, God's mercy is like that. A great light of love and tenderness broke through his accumulated resentment. As Epictetus taught, seek not for events to happen as you wish, but wish for events to happen as they do, and your life will go smoothly. In Somalia's desert and sea, Moore discovered this ancient wisdom was his most reliable compass toward freedom, not just physical liberation, but the deeper freedom of a mind that refuses to remain captive even after the chains are removed.